Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name's Lynn Smith. I'm this morning's representative from the church board. I hope you all had a great week and have decompressed a bit from the holidays. And I hope we all have a great day. I hope you enjoy the day, especially all you Packer fans. Go Packers. We have a variety of announcements. If you look in the order of service, we're actually starting a few classes this week. Paul Norton's mindfulness meditation class will start on Monday night, tomorrow night, here at church, and you can sign up for one or all the sessions. And then our minister, Jane, will be starting a class on Tuesday night. It's called A Chosen Faith. And after service today, there's an informational and sign-up meeting for another class. It's a six-week discussion course called Menu for the Future. And that's described in the order of service. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you're visiting today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and about Unitarian Universalism, so help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and you'd like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you're visiting with us, visiting us with your children, it's our custom for the kids to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain here in the service. If you would like to go along to your child's class, please do so. There's a nursery just outside the door to my right across the entryway if you need childcare during the service. Our children's education classes end at 11:15, and that's the time you can go pick up your kids from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be very pleased if you introduced them. Or if any guests have brought themselves and you'd like to stand up and introduce yourself, we'd really enjoy getting to know you. Oh. Welcome.
Hi.
Nice. Oh, welcome. Okay. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. There's a conversation corner. It's a good place to gather for further discussion after the service and about the service. Please put your cell phones on silence. And I hope you enjoy today's service. Our minister, Reverend Jane Espenson, will be speaking about the power of words.
Thank you.
Good morning. Our opening words this morning are by an anonymous author, actually. And they begin like this. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but are connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to one another. Please join now in singing the chalice lighting. You will find the tune to the hymn in your hymnal at the back. It's number 372. This is a time in our service for the story for all ages, and so all ages are invited to come and sit up in front here. Here's one brave soul coming right away. Hello. This is a very famous story called The Bundle of Sticks, and by somebody called Aesop. And Aesop's Fables, he wrote a lot of fables and stories and little things for us to think about. So this is a story about a man a very, very long time ago who had some children. And these children quarreled and fought and disagreed and argued all of the time. And they wouldn't listen to each other. They had their own points of views. They wouldn't listen to each other at all. And this father was really fit to be tied. And he was like, you've got to listen to each other. You have to stop arguing. You have to come together and realize that we are a family. And they're like, no, because my opinion's right. No, my opinion's right. No, this way that I think is the right way to be. And they're stupid. So he got very frustrated. And he thought, oh, there must be another way to illustrate what I'm talking about. So he asked all of the children to go out into the forest and to pick up a stick and to bring it to him. And so they did, and with that stick, then he made a bundle. And he put all of the sticks together and he tied this bundle, and then he gave it to the children one by one, and he said, break this bundle. One try. This is just an illustrative story here. Okay, good try. No using of knees or feet. Just break it with your hands. Whoa, very good. Okay, break it. Very good. Oh, no knees. Good. Oh, there's no winners here. And no untying it, my dear child. You just have to break. Try to just break it. Just hold on to it and just break it if you can. Can you glue it all together? No. Ooh. I don't. don't think so. Okay. So one of the children broke a part of the bundle, but not the whole bundle of sticks. So then the father said, I'm going to give each of you one stick. Feel great about doing that? Well, what the father was saying is, this is exactly what you don't want to happen. Because when you are all together, when you come together and you join together with your thoughts and your ideas, and you can listen to each other and you can agree on something, then you are strong. Nothing can break you. But when you're just all by yourself with your own thoughts and your own ideas and your own opinions and you don't listen to anybody else, you will break just like this. And you won't be of any worth to the world. You won't be able to be helpful. You won't be able to make changes or anything because you can be broken. So the moral of the story is that you need to stick together and become a bundle that's unbreakable. So that is the story for today. Thank you. You can keep the sticks. Well, now you're all inspired. Now we're going to sing the first hymn of the morning. Morning has broken, no pun intended. Hymn number 38. This is now a time in our service for our offertory where we share our wealth, both in our financial wealth, but also in just our talents and our gifts to this congregation. So you are invited to give what you can today to sustain and nurture this very important religious institution. Thank you.
This is the sacred time in our service when we share our deepest concerns and our greatest joys with our spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, raise your hand and an usher will bring you the microphone. Briefly tell us your joy or concern that you'd like to share, and I'll light a candle to have memory of that for you so that us in your spiritual community can hold a thought for your deep joy or concern. As our tradition is, I will light our first candle, our memorial candle, in memory of lives that have been lost and the conflicts that are currently going on in our world today, that we may find a peaceful way to end our conflicts.
One is the great painting that's been done, and we've been able to see it develop over the past few weeks, and I see we have a new wall. I know we have Angel Troyer to thank, and I don't know if there are more people to thank, but I think it's fabulous, and I'd like to have a candle of joy. The second one is for our lighting that doesn't buzz anymore, the new ballast, and I'm very thankful for that. I'd like a candle lit for that as well.
My name's Yvonne, and I'd like you to light a candle in honor of Reverend Al Nichols, who passed away recently. He was instrumental when our church started. He helped us be able to rent space in both the Delafield Presbyterian Church and the church in Wales, and he was just a very honorable, gentle, kind person.
My name is Julie, and I'd like you to light a candle of joy for the youth group yesterday went to repairs of the breach, and I'm not sure if it was the caffeine that my daughter consumed while she was there or the experience or a combination of both, but she was full of information and was very excited and impressed, and it was a great experience. So thank you to the people who did that. And then also a candle of concern for the people who need to use that shelter.
And I'm Susan over here. I have both a joy and a concern. I told my daughter Grace, who comes to this church, who's 11, that my husband and I are separating, and I hope that she'll find the value in living a courageous yet authentic life.
I just like to light a candle of concern for all the people who were killed yesterday in Tucson, and that the survivors can find peace, and that this type of thing stops happening, that people stop inciting this kind of thing, and that they find a way to stop mentally unstable people from being able to buy guns. So, candle of concern.
And I would like a candle of joy to be lit. I just found out last night that Liz and John Thompson have a little baby girl whose name is Elsie. So we'd like to welcome Elsie to the family.
I'm really bad at this.
Hello. I think it's working. I just wanted to say that the proceeds from the memorial that we had for my son Ben, the people who contributed in memory of him, the money was gathered up and sent to the Hope Center, and it was close to $1,000.
Hi, my name is Claire. I'd like to light a candle of joy. My best friend from way back is pregnant with her first child. It's very exciting, and I hope that everything goes smoothly.
I'll light our last candle for those joys and concerns that we keep deep in our hearts. And know that if there is something that you'd like to share privately with Reverend Jane, that she does have office hours that you can contact her personally.
I invite you now to just take a moment for a silent meditation, reflection, and prayer. And I will lead with these words by Abraham Heschel. Prayer invites God to be present in our spirits and in our lives. Prayer cannot bring water to parched land, nor mend a broken bridge, nor rebuild a ruined city. But prayer can water an arid soul, mend a broken heart, and rebuild a weakened will. May it be so. We will now remain seated and sing the Centering Hymn number 123, Spirit of Life.
Our reading today is by the poet Rumi, entitled, Who Speaks Words with My Mouth? All day I think about it. Then at night I say it. Where did I come from? And what am I supposed to be doing? I have no idea. My soul is from elsewhere, I'm sure of that, and I intend to end up there. This drunkenness began in some other tavern. When I get around back to that place, I'll be completely sober. Meanwhile, I'm like a bird from another continent sitting in this aviary. The day is coming when I fly off. But who is it now in my ear who hears my voice, who says words with my mouth, who looks out with my eyes? What is the soul? I cannot stop asking. If I could taste one sip of an answer, I could break out of this prison for drunks. I did not come here of my own accord, and I can't leave that way. Whoever brought me here will have to take me home. This poetry, I never know what I am going to say. I don't plan it. When I'm outside the saying of it, I get very quiet and rarely speak at all.
Last year, at the final church service of the year here at Lake Country UU, I was the speaker for the Flower Communion service. And in that service, at the beginning of my sermon, before I got underway with the well-known and well-loved story of Norbert Chopik, I took a little side road and uttered the thought that there were certain words I had difficulty with, and communion was one of them. And that before I could proceed with the Flower Communion service, I needed to take apart that word, communion, discuss it, and then put it back together again, so that we were all on the same page with how that word was being used in the context of that service. I did this, and I continued with the service with no broken bones or scuffed knees that I noted. But I was wrong. There were broken bones and scuffed knees. Injuries had been made by me, to some, by my innocently uttering that some words that one might take issue with were here in our congregations. And what happened was this. When I had named the word communion as a word that I found to be challenging, I also named the words minister, church, and sermon as a few of the words that I also had issues with, stating that these were words for contemplation for another time and place and sermon, and that I would therefore only focus for the moment on the word communion, which is what I did. Well, what happened, unbeknownst to me, was that there were a few people who were upset that I had named the words that I had named as being words that I had problems with, because they had no problems with these words and were upset that I did. And so these people went home, feathers ruffled, talked about what I had said amongst themselves and with others, and then made the decision to not come back to hear any of my Sunday sermons, or whatever you want to call them, in the future. Luckily, I was told all of this soon after the fact, and so took the opportunity to encourage direct communication between those people and myself, so that I could hear directly from them what was so upsetting about what I had said, and to explain what I had meant by my statement so that we could hear each other and understand each other and find a place of reconciliation and peace between us. Unfortunately, that meeting has not happened yet, but I remain optimistic and hopeful that it will occur at some point. But the important thing about that event, which is why I'm mentioning it here, is that that injury did occur by my innocent naming of those words, as injury often can and does happen to and by us, with no malice aforethought. But even more pointedly, in this situation, I found that it was an ironic event, in that this injured feeling that these people were experiencing was exactly my point in initially stating last June that there are words that one might take issue with in our UU congregations. Even in naming some words as words of concern, the very naming of that reality created a negative reaction to such a degree that people chose to boycott my services forevermore. Why would this be, you might ask? Well, that's actually quite understandable at some level. For you see, UU congregations are primarily comprised of people who come from various faith backgrounds, which they have either left behind or still hold dear, portions of them at any rate. And within these varied faith traditions, there are, of course, words that are specifically religious, that are used which cause either a positive or a negative reaction within the believers or the former believers of those faiths. And when those believers come to UU houses of worship, those words they hold dear or react negatively to also come inside. Those words are here with us in this room today, in this time of our gathering. Unspoken words, soon to be spoken words, worried words that they might be spoken, hoping that they will be spoken words. Words, words, words. Words are surrounding us at the ready, longingly, leapingly, lovingly, even languidly at the ready. I remember my first weekend of a 3-year program at the Humanist Institute in New York City, where I was complementing my seminary schooling with humanist teachings. I could hardly wait to get there, to step away from the endless words at my Christian seminary. But what happened by the end of the first day at that institute was that I nearly found myself screaming for relief, wanting to burst through the doors of the Ethical Culture Society, thrust myself out upon the curb out there in New York City, hailing the first taxi I could find to get me very quickly to the airport to transport me swiftly back into the safe sanctuary of the Christian seminary that I had looked forward to taking a break from. So what caused this desire to flee? It was because this particular group of passionately committed future humanist leaders, instead of wearing thin the name of Jesus Christ, as I felt we were doing incessantly at seminary, couldn't even move forward in our discussions because someone would inevitably challenge one word or another, and when that word was looked up in the holy book for humanists and UUs, which is, by the way, the dictionary, there would inevitably be a great hue and cry over which dictionary had been used, which edition it was, when was it published, gad, probably even which type font had been used. Before there could be any sort of acceptance of the definition of a particular word we were parsing at our own peril. The myriad translators of Jesus' often less than clear speeches had nothing on this group of people. Ah, yes, words. So let us look at a few of the religious words which I have found can both attract and detract in our UU congregations, which can call up within us a sense of peace and love, or which can shut us down inside and close our ears, that can make us feel welcome or make us feel shunned and silenced, that make us feel calm, or which can cause us to writhe in our seats. words that can say to us, this is the religious home that I've been looking for. Or words which can say to us, I will never come back here again. Church. What does that word say? It says that a particular building is a house of worship. But it also says that that house of worship is for those who are Christians. And I'm including Catholics when I say Christian, even though there are some Christians who do not think that Catholics are Christians, even though Catholics themselves say that they were the very first Christians. But that is for yet another sermon in the future. So then the word church. Is it a Christian word? Yes, it is now. But does it appear in the Christian Bible? No. According to the early Greek translations of Jesus, they say Jesus used the word ecclesia, meaning a gathering of people, to express Jesus' intent of the Holy Spirit flowing through the people, not through a particular edifice. The word ecclesia then got translated into the word kyriakon, which meant the Lord's house, which then became translated into the word church later on by religious leaders. A concept of a place for worship was created versus a way of worshiping that spoke about a gathering of people. The place of worship, the building, over time then became the central focus for the teachings of Jesus by the clergy, in order for the clergy to have some control, both religiously and politically, over the people who were there. They were told what to believe, they were told how to behave, they were told what they could and could not do in the name of. Now, none of this had anything to do with Jesus' teachings, where he simply spoke of allowing the Holy Spirit to flow through a gathering of people. But regular folk didn't know this, and so the word of God got handed down in this place of God, this place called church. When Unitarianism and Universalism was founded in the early years of our nation, they were both Christian religions, and so their places of worship were called churches. Over time, Unitarian Universalism has moved beyond Christianity to becoming a more broadly defined religion of the people for the people, diverse and expansive, wide-reaching and all-encompassing of the best aspects of the world's religions. Best by our own interpretation of what that means, namely focusing on peace and love, justice and equality, respect for diversity, and a passion for social justice issues. This has meant that for many, many, many UU congregations, they no longer call their places of worship church, but use instead the words society or fellowship, not because church is no longer the right name to use, but that to some it felt as though the word was too limiting. But does this matter, what our gathering places are called? Does it make a difference to who feels welcomed here and who doesn't? Does the name we choose to use open our doors to all or keep some people out? At Prairie UU in Madison, for example, they call themselves a society, and yet when they speak to their friends and neighbors and families, they more often talk about the fact that they are going to church. Why? If it's not a church but a society, why do they say that they're going to church? Well, it's just to simplify things. The intention is not to shut out people of other faith traditions who might use other words for their places of worship, nor do we use the word church to imply that Unitarian Universalism is a Christian denomination. Interestingly, here at LCUC, I have had many conversations with people who have come up to me expressing the concern that this building is called a church, because it feels to them that it implies that this is a Christian denomination and that they are either not welcome because they come from other faith traditions, or that they really want to be moving beyond all of that. Since language is for communication purposes, we must choose language that conveys an accurate message to the majority of the people to whom we are speaking. So although we may prefer one word over the other, it is of no matter what we call this place, for it is in the minds and the hearts of the people who gather inside it that are of import. The next word, sermon. I recently had a UU minister get very angry at me because I was speaking with him about a recent talk of his I'd heard, and I was telling him what I'd liked about it, what it had made me think of, and so on and so forth, when all of a sudden he interrupted me with a raised voice, clearly agitated, and he said, "Don't ever use that word talk when you talk about what I have spoken on a Sunday morning again. That is so disrespectful of you." I was pretty surprised, since I hadn't actually noticed that I'd even used the word talk instead of sermon, but I could understand it if I had, because that's exactly what we're talking about today, words. Talk, to me, seems like neutral language to use, not loaded with specifically religious connotations that may or may not have felt okay to that particular person. But it was just the opposite situation for him. By my using the word talk and not using the word sermon, this minister felt that I was denigrating his well-formulated Sunday morning message, detracting from it from being something holy into just being talk, or being a lecture versus being a spiritual experience. It surprised me that it was a UU minister who reacted so strongly to my use of the word talk, when that is a perfectly reasonable word to use for a Sunday morning message in the majority of UU congregations. Talk and the word sermon or the word address are all interchangeable words in UU congregations, but not for this minister. And I certainly respect that. But it also opened my eyes because it reminded me of how loaded language is, even non-religious language, when used in a religious context, and how people react to language, what they expect from it, and why they use particular words or stand apart from certain words, and how that choice in words not only conveys their message, but it says a great deal about who they are as the users of that language. A wise friend of mine told me recently that when he hears specific words in his UU church that he doesn't use himself, he doesn't react negatively to them, but he says instead, "I just see this as something that gives me insight into who that person is. Instead of cringing at words that might be used by someone, I focus instead of learning who that person is and how they think." So no matter what we call this time of speaking in our services, the messages we give are what matter in the minds and the hearts of the people who are gathered herein. It is that which is of the greatest import. Word number three, spirituality. This is a word that has come into great use in the past within Unitarian Universalism. And although it's bandied about with great panache and zeal and seriousness in emotional utterance and quiet reverence, it is also greeted by many UUs with a puzzled look, a quiet shake of their head, and a sigh of frustration. There's that word again, spirituality. Why is this the reaction? Well, mostly because Unitarian Universalism has a love-hate relationship regarding overt or even obliquely religious words, given the varied religious experiences, both good and bad, that many UUs have in their hip pockets, tucked up their sleeves, carried in unbeknownst to them on the soles of their shoes as they come into our congregations. Experiences which either buoy them up or weigh them down, or worse. And the word spirituality is one of those very difficult words for many you use. Not only because it's overtly because of its overtly religious sound, but also because it's so nebulous. What does it actually mean? And why did it come into being our current word du jour within Unitarian Universalism? Well, first of all, our holy book, the dictionary, tells us that the word spirit comes from the Latin word spiritus, which means breath. The spirit of a human being is thus the animating, sensitive, or vital principle in an individual, a spirit that develops and grows as an integral aspect of a living being, which can become synonymous with the concept of life, with an interconnectedness with all things, to a universal consciousness. When I asked one of my agnostic UU friends what she thought of the concept of spirituality, she said that she actually liked the word. Because I don't worship spirits like the Holy Ghost or the Holy Trinity. So the word spirituality for me means contemplation, a way to express something without having to worship a deity. Sort of like a soul meeting another soul, or a harmonious relationship with all sentient living beings. When the words and the music, the sermon, and even the silence of a service all come together, and I find myself listening to that which is said, and even to that which is not said, I find that that is a spiritual moment, and it brings me peace and resolve. Now, as to why the word spirituality suddenly started gaining a footing in UU congregations across the nation, it's because Unitarian Universalism wasn't really growing a few years back, and so there was concern about that. And in order to tap into a body of people who might be UU, but just haven't found us yet, it was determined that starting to use overtly religious-sounding language like spirituality and downplaying the humanistic core of language within Unitarian Universalism that speaks of common sense and ethics as grounding principles, humanism being another word that is very greatly misunderstood, it was hoped that this lovely religion of ours would grow. And it has. But not completely, and not easily, because there is still some sense that we are milquetoasty and too all-encompassing, watered down by the use of some of these words, and that the solid bones of this religion are becoming draped in silk cloth, covered in pomp and circumstance, and therefore no longer bearing the weight of the social justice responsibilities inherent at its very core. But we parse words at our own peril, for no matter what we call the inspiring moments in our services, the experiences felt here are as diverse as the minds and the hearts of the people who are gathered inside, and the richness that is what is feeding our souls. It behooves us, one and all, to be cognizant that not everyone uses the words we use or the words we are most comfortable with. But if we can look beyond the words, to find the meaning that are meant by the words, to find the meaning meant by the speakers and the writers and the singers of the words, to use new words that communicate the best and the worst in life, and old words that remind us of our place in the world, I believe we will find ourselves so much better off than if we continue to stand where we have always stood. Religious language need not scare off grit and courage, nor take away conscious thought and applied good works. Nor does a rational mind mean that there's no room for beauty and poetry and candlelight, for music and for emotion, for inspiration and resolve and for love. There is room for all of this and more within these hallowed halls. So let us be wise and thoughtful and kind and open so that we can be at peace with language that may seem nebulous to some, but highly grounding to others. Let us be willing to seek all ways to come together under this one diverse and expansive tent of our faith, so that all may find relevance and meaning here in this place of our gathering. And let us hope that one day those people who have left or who are considering leaving our UU congregations because we might not be using the words they would like to hear would instead stay and say to us, I need to hear these words, and I want you to use my words as well as my learning to use your words so that we can become something together. For what other reason do we gather than that? Words, words, words. Let us hear, let us hear, let us hear. Amen. You may rise, those who are willing and able, to sing the final hymn of the morning, number 112, Do You Hear? Well, this is a time in our service, which is not always the case in many Unitarian Universalist service in churches and congregations, but it is very common in smaller congregations such as this to have something called a polylog, wherein people can comment on what has been shared today here or your own thoughts on the topic at large, and try to keep comments brief so that people have a chance to say what they'd like to say before the end of the service.
I would just like to thank you for your talk or sermon, for those who prefer, today, and that it really rings a bell with me. And when I first joined, a lot of the words, they weren't offensive. They just weren't words I was used to. I have a background in Judaism. And I really thought, you know, I should speak to someone about this. And I thought, they're words. I'm teaching my daughter words can't hurt you, and to understand why that word was said. So hopefully those people come back and at least have the discussion, because that's really what we're all about. So thank you.
I'm Jerry. And Jane, thank you. I also like to thank you for your thought-provoking sermon or talk or whatever you'd like to call it, and words are so very important. I remember one job that I had where one of my coworkers was a Jewish fellow, and he didn't like to hear all these wordsmithing in meetings, so he just said he was anti-Semitic.
Oh.
In another instance, I can think of a few years ago, I invited Dan Barker, who's the co-chairman of the Freedom from Religious Foundation, which is an organization of atheists and agnostics, to come and give a talked to us, and I told him I was on the worship committee, and he took great offense to the fact that I had anything to do with worship because of the connotation that usually has of groveling before the supernatural. And I reminded him of the word worship came from the word worship, and it was the acknowledgement of the worthy. And I said, we certainly found you worthy, and he came and he gave us a great service.
Hi, I'm Barbara. Yesterday, the kids who went to Repairs of the Breach got to encounter the word prayer, another one of our words. The Methodist group of women who were there at the end of their visit asked the group to lead, our kids to lead a prayer. And Phil Smith is just like, Alex said, his face just went blank, and he was going, and Alex said, oh, it's okay, we'll do our chalice lighting, and that's what they did. So.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I'll kind of tack on to the sort of the message about our youth in this particular congregation. Also, thank you, Jane, for your message this morning. Another word. Anyway, the middle schoolers last year, going through the Neighboring Faiths program and visiting synagogues and temples and churches around our community, really, I think, got a nice overview of all the different nuances and the different ways that different religions and people of different spiritual faiths and things like that kind of look at these things. And so, you know, I'll encourage everybody to, you know, speak with our middle schoolers and our high schools, because these are the things that they're learning about right now. Right now, the high schoolers, what's in the order of service has actually got put off till next week. But they're speaking of another word that kind of rankles some people, Jesus. And kind of discussing the role of this man in history and in religion and that sort of thing. And finally, just another thing, last year with the middle schoolers, throughout the year as we were visiting these neighboring faiths, another word that has kind of come up is, what does that mean? There was a lot of discussion about the difference between spirituality and religion. And I think the kids themselves came up with a wonderful sort of understanding how spirituality, this is kind of the general thing, spirituality is something that happens personally within you, and then religion is what happens when people come together and share that and practice it as a group. So I encourage you to, you know, continue these conversations with your own kids, or if you don't have kids, with the other youth in our membership here.
I'm Yvonne, and I'll just make a few things. I actually have never run across the word polylog in any other UU congregations. They all like it, I mean, but talk back. But anyway, I think it's unique to this group, but nonetheless. Many years ago when I taught RE, and I think it was for third graders, it was exactly that process of, I had a Christian background, and the curriculum called for addressing the words prayer and many of the words that I struggled with, and it was a wonderful process to reimagine what they meant to me at this later stage in life. And I think you hit on it really well, the idea that there's a word in the dictionary and you can use words to define it, but there's really a feeling behind many of those. And it's a wonderful process to ask about that feeling and why do you have that reaction and what is really at the root of it. And I think there's a really learning, growing process in that.
Thank you very much for this message. My name is Kaz, and when I talk about some of the words that the Japanese used, and those words were translated into English, it gives a completely different meaning because the experience with that word is so different. For example, God. God is, when I say the word God, in my classroom, people think it's about God the Creator or Christian concept of the God. When in Japanese we use a God, it's more of a spiritual. Spirit is probably Holy Spirit will be probably close to that. And coming from studying the Buddhism lately, more and more, whatever the words you have it, behind it is experience. Behind it is the eyes and the thoughts that went with that word. And Buddhists say, empty your mind. And when you empty in the mind, emptying your experience that goes with that particular words. And you know, with this speech, your message, made my understanding of my thoughts, my experience behind it, and maybe we should try to understand people from where they are, you know, not from where you are. Thank
you. Hi, I'm Anita, and I'll just be real quick. It's actually kind of funny that we had this service. I usually just come to services not really knowing what the topic's about, and I just recently, I work at a men's hair salon, a barber shop out in West Dallas, and they asked me if I wanted off on Sunday, and I said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. I can go to church. And I was quickly followed. I work with a group of young adults. Even my manager is pretty young, so we're all kind of a group around the same age range, with a bunch of hoots and hollers and, you know, oh, geez, we've got a religious girl on our hands and stuff like that. And I was like, no, no, it's, you know, and I tried to explain that to me, the word church and religion isn't necessarily the general population's, you know, that's not what it means to me. And I was like, you know, it's like a community of people who I can get along with and, you know, share my thoughts and views and study, you know, what this is. And, you know, they were all kind of dumbfounded that the word that I chose to use was not what they knew to be the word church. And so I just thought it was interesting that this was the topic of the sermon today. So.
Hi, I'm Erin. And this topic that you're using today reminds me of, I think it was Stephen Covey, but he probably got it from somewhere else, who said, seek first to understand rather than to be understood. And recently, this topic came into my life as I had written an email to some a group of friends in New York, and one person was so angry with what I said that it was as if the internet came out and hit me and knocked me off my chair. And this childish urge came to me to scream as loud as I could, everything you say, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. But then I thought about what that saying means, because as a child, I didn't understand. It's like when words come at you, if you just let them flow off of you and then try to listen to what the person says, it was actually a silly, profound mini lesson in, you know, moving through life. And so the thing that touched me with what you said was the person who said he wants to, I don't know how he said it. He said it beautifully about focusing on the other person and what are they actually saying. And although that's very challenging, that's what I take away with me today. Thank you.
I think equally, my name is Mike, equally important is what the person is not saying. Thank you, by the way, for your sermon, I'm going to call it, because that's what it was. And as we know, I'm always right. But what a person is not saying, what they're maybe struggling with trying to say, and perhaps can't say it either because they don't have the cognitive, you know, part of their brain working in, you know, to make a connection with the feeling. But it's possible also that what they're trying to say is beyond words. What we like to say in the seminary is ineffable, unspeakable, because frequently in religion, obviously, that's what we're trying to get at. And I only want to make one other observation, which I've made here before, which is Emmanuel Levinas, in his book Totality and Infinity, refers to human relationships and uses the word religion with a small r. And he insists at the beginning of the book, he says, I'm not talking about positive religion with a capital R. Positive not meaning something that's good, but positive meaning that you make a statement, that you posit something and say that this is a, you know, this is what you ought to believe. But his dealing, my dealing with the person as other than me, is religion with a small r.
Briefly, just Angel, you know, I'm going on 21 years in being sober in AA, and there's a lot of Christian Bible things in AA, which bothered me tremendously. But what I had to do, and I still do, is very simple. This is very simple. Take what you need and leave the rest. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had this blessing of being sober and actually living and not being in that dark place. Just take what you need and leave the rest. Thank you.
I just wanted to say about the word religion, which comes from the Latin word religare, which has to do with ligaments. And so it has to do with the joining together of ligaments. So it's the joining together. When you are religare, that you are actually connected to one another in a manner, with this small r manner. And so I think our holy book, the dictionary, is actually quite an interesting thing to study, because it does give you the grounding roots of linguistics in every culture. Like when Kaz is talking about her Japanese culture and the words and what it means, I'm also a literary translator, and I translate from Swedish to English. And it's very difficult to translate anything, because every word in each culture has with it its own history and feeling and depth that another word that you could actually say, oh, that's what that means, still isn't catching that. And so I think when people are speaking and using particular language, language that speaks to them or language that really pushes them away, it really is about what Kaz was talking about, that experience, and to really be able to sit down and say, well, tell me a little bit about that. And most people haven't had that chance to talk about that. I mean, we just go about our lives, so here in our congregation and within Unitarian Universalism, we have the opportunity to really, really learn from one another. There's a beautiful poster out here. I don't know if it still is. Yvonne always puts these great posters, and this board out here is really great. But there was one poster that she had once, and I can't remember it exactly, but it had to do with, you know, to speak. It takes courage to speak, but it takes even more courage to stay silent. And that has to do with just listening. And so I think that's part of what Mike was saying, is what isn't said is just as important sometimes.
Just one more quick comment. I've been aware of how difficult it is for me to use the word church, or to teach the word to my kids to use the word church when they talk about or mention what we do on Sunday mornings, and particularly with my family, who I was brought up Catholic, and they were pretty invested in me continuing as a Catholic and pretty disappointed when I didn't baptize my children or decide to continue with the Catholic religion. So using the word church around my family is very difficult for me to do, because I know then that they'll assume, oh, she's back, you know, she's come back. And I don't know, really want to have the whole conversation with them about what Unitarianism is. And so I don't use it too much.
I remember when I was at seminary, you know, I was at a Christian seminary, for heaven's sakes, and there were a lot of things that I didn't know, tons of things that I didn't know, because I wasn't raised in a Christian tradition myself. I was raised Unitarian, but I had a Jewish mother, and so I didn't really hear this other language around me. But I remember once I asked in a class, I said, what does it mean that Jesus died for our sins? And I just thought I would get an answer, and then I'd jot it down, and there I'd know. And so somebody answered and gave me an answer, and I'm writing it down, and someone else said, well, that's not what it means. And then they gave me an answer. I was like, and then someone said, well, that's not what that means. And then someone said, well, that's not what that means. And they had this whole, and then I'm sitting there like, put my pen down, because now I could see this was not going to be just an answer that I thought. And they had this big, huge discussion, and they were very distressed, and people were really upset with each other. And then the professor said, well, Jane, you've done it again. We're dismissing class 15 minutes early, and you can all go out in the hall and talk about this at your leisure. But I was really shocked, because when words are bandied about, I just assume that those who are bandying them about know what they're talking about. They know what it means to them. And it isn't that it's wrong what they're thinking or what they presume or what they're saying. It's that we grow up believing things, and we never question it. We never ask the question. We never try to find out more. We never look to our neighbor or look over here or even within our own family. It's just a given. We just are, and this is how we talk, and this is the words that we use. I was surprised when I got the job here at this church that it was called a church and that this was a sermon on a Sunday morning and that this was called the sanctuary. I was very surprised because it was so overtly Christian language for me. So I really wrestled with that a little bit. But when I then had to think about what does it already mean, and the word sanctuary is this beautiful place of safety, a bird sanctuary, a wildlife sanctuary. It's a place where you are safe. And so this building is a place that's very safe for anybody who comes through these doors, regardless of their religious background, their beliefs, their sexual orientation. Doesn't make any difference. Everybody is welcome here and should feel safe. And safe not only to agree with one another, but it's very, very important that people feel safe here to disagree. That's of utmost importance in this sanctuary. All right, that is the end of our service today. I'll just close with these words by Theodore Parker. Be ours a religion which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith, divine living. Go in peace.